This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. Want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
What it boiled down to on this particular trip was, guys were around each other, they got relaxed, and they let their guard down. They were getting together in groups, they weren't wearing masks as much as they should have, they weren't social distancing.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
I like the patience. There's no rush.
Drew to the cup. And Zion got to the glass. Sliced his way home again. 102-93, 22 for Zion in 22 minutes of play.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
See what the Sixers do here out of the timeout. They post Embiid. A three from Milton. Yes! Shake Milton buries the three to put the Sixers up one with 6.1 remaining in the fourth. How's that for a bounce back?
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
City. Time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader, 1080 The Fan. Brandon Sprague, Andy Dirt Johnson in with you on this beautiful Tuesday.
What's happening? Welcome back, boys. The band's back together. How was the three-day weekend? We're the White Hat Club today. We all got white hats going on.
Yeah. You know what that means.
I don't know what that means. What does that mean?
You know what we're into.
Oh, yeah. Huh?
White hats.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Me and Swag rocking the exact same hat.
That's right.
I was pretty darn close. I'm not going to lie. I got like four hats hanging in my dining room as I leave. And I wear a hat most days. Not every day, but most days. And the Sheep Ranch hat was one of the hats that I did consider putting on today. We would have made it 3 for 3.
I had a feeling one of you idiots was going to wear it. But I'm wearing white shoes, white tee. I thought, let's just finish off the white outfit with the white hat.
You're just going summer vibes today. I like it, man. It's
going to
be beautiful.
This was just what was hanging next to me. Because I played a Langdon yesterday for the first time since they... they did their reconstruction.
The major changes. Sand traps taken out.
Yeah, you didn't play with us without the traps.
That was the one day Swigart could make it. He could make it on Saturday.
How great is that, huh?
Yes, it was perfect because I would have hit it in the church pew bunkers on 8. It was grass. I tagged a 4 hybrid and made par at 8.
Look at that. Damn.
So we shot 88. And that
David
included,
and company, thank you for the changes. You're improving scores left and right.
That included a triple and two doubles, and that was 88.
An 88 with a triple and two doubles. There you go.
So we had a little 4-par run right in the middle from 7 through 10.
Dialed in, baby.
And then, the par 5-11 that's like 8 miles long, I got on the side of a hill and then hit one sideways to the other side of the hill.
Oh, yeah.
Got a little loosey from there.
Been done many a time. I shot a 94, and I had a quad and a triple back-to-back to finish my front nine. I was playing really good.
It's encouraging and discouraging at the same time because you know what you're capable of, but you got to get rid of those bad holes, man.
Now, let me kind of ask you gents a question, and I will, for the non-golf fans out there, you probably think we talk too much golf. I get it. Let me kind of use this in any other way, a sport that you play, a hobby, whatever. When you let people know what you don't like, and then they pretend they don't remember, Do you say something or do you shrug it off?
I think I need a further explanation here. Can you use it in a sentence?
I'm not quite following.
I played Gresham on Sunday.
Okay.
I'd played Gresham like one time my whole life. It's not a very difficult course. It's actually pretty open and forgiving. But I'm playing really well. We get to holes 8 and 9 coming up. I just parred 7 after the crappiest of tee shots. So I'm feeling good. My brother-in-law, and I've made this abundantly clear, like for 2-3 years now.
But got some family beef. I like it.
My brother-in-law goes, hey, how do you do with pressure? This is random. We're waiting on the tee box of 8. And I'm like, what? I'm like, I don't know. It depends what you're talking about. If it's radio, I feel okay. If I'm playing basketball, I'm probably comfortable. Anything else? uneasy. And I go, well, what are you talking about? And he goes, well, you're on pace right now to shoot in the 80s. And I said, dude, I don't want to know that.
It's like mentioning a no-hitter. You don't do it.
And guess what happened on that next? It was a par 5. I shot a 9.
Yeah.
The next hole, I'm like, okay. I'm like a combination of you did this to yourself, but also you keep thinking about it because he mentioned it. I step up to the 9 tee box, triple. I triple into the turn after having a good tee shot, a second shot. I screwed it up, right? Really screwed it up. And I had to sit there, and it took a drunk-ass big dude who jumped on at the turn at Gresham. There's a bar behind it. This dude's hammered.
He's having a good time.
He's got pants on, full-on shirt. He's hitting tee shots, but he's missing and falling down, and his ass is sticking out.
Whoa, whoa.
So it's like it's exactly what you think. And that calmed me down, and I ended up shooting, I think, a 44 on the back, which felt great. But I was very frustrated because I felt like I could have gotten the 80s for the first time, and said that, and I was done.
Yeah, usually at the turn, I think it's appropriate to, you know, if you're playing 18 at the turn, to
kind of know where you're at.
Hey, here's what I got everybody at, especially if you're the scorer. But no, if people want to know the scores, they can ask. A lot of people are keeping their own score anyway.
I don't ever like to know the score of the whole round. I can get a feel of where I'm probably at. Like if I shoot a 110, I can feel that. Right?
I usually check in at the turn. That's usually try and not pay attention to what the scores are at. But at the turn, you kind of get to the 10 tee box. Hey, where's everybody at? What everybody shoot? That kind of thing.
If I'm keeping score, I'm with you.
I'm at 41. I'm at 42. Right. I'm at 45. I'm at 37. You know, you go through just kind of where everybody's at in the scoring. The only area in which what he did is acceptable is if you have money on the line, then mind games are completely acceptable.
And no
you
money.
Can use whatever strategy that you want to get into the kitchen of your opponent.
But if you're
opponent,
just out playing and everybody's trying to...
That's Bush League. He knew exactly what he was doing. And he knew that you would crumble under the pressure.
He also, we golf with one... there's a P1 that listens to the show. He's a good guy. And I've golfed with him a couple times, and I might be golfing with him next week. He and him have known each other since high school, so they, when I've played with them, they trash talk each other once in a while. I don't ever dive into those waters because I can't handle it. I'm already a fragile enough golfer.
You're mentally fragile on the course.
I'm worried about every stroke, every shot. I don't want to think about my score, so I don't know. He likes to trash talk, but not usually with me. And I don't think he was meaning at a trash talk perspective. It was more of a kind of just being like an older brother jackass type move. You know, like, hey, dude, you're playing the best golf of your life right now.
Just kind of rattling your cage a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
The good strategy or the advice that somebody gave me one time, too, is when you think about it is don't be afraid to go low. Don't be afraid to be good.
No, I'm not. Yeah.
Right? Like you get on that tee box, somebody tells you, hey, you're pacing for the 80s. You say, damn right, I'm pacing for the 80s. I'm a good golfer.
You should have saw the tee shot right after. It was just, oh, man, I sliced the living hell out. Do you guys don't have this in any element of your life?
Oh, I have it on the golf course all the time.
Okay, so there are things on the golf course you don't like.
Well, yeah, that kind of stuff gets in your head when you know, like I was chasing a PR on Saturday. And I had a birdie putt on 18 for a 76, which would have been my best round I've ever shot.
Dude.
And it was like a 12-15 footer, so not a makeable putt, but I'm thinking to myself, like,
it is makeable.
This is, like if this rolls in, it's going to be a PR. And of course, I didn't want to leave it short, and I blew it like 6 feet past the hole, and then I missed the par putt. I three putted for bogey for a 78. But those kind of things get into your head. Like you're thinking down the stretch. I try and not tabulate the score, but it's hard not to when you're playing well. You're like, I'm only a couple over par right now, and just don't lose it. Hold it together.
Swag, you don't deal with this in any element of your life? Like where if somebody mentions... It's kind of, I think saying the no-hitter thing, it's pretty apt to me, right? Not that I'm ever golfing the equivalent of a no-hitter, but it's
that's why you don't say anything.
It's that delicate for me.
The guy
knows me. He just doesn't say it.
As play by play guy. If somebody's like perfect at the foul, I'm like,
don't jinx it.
Oh, are you the guy that goes, you know, he's 11 for his last 11 at the line?
Don't jinx it, man.
And then the commentator always goes, why'd you say that?
Yeah.
How do I let if you know we're in the first half and he's like he's hit his first three free throws, that's no big deal. At what point though does it become
getting like north of 10 somewhere in that range, like,
you know, hey, he's hit his first couple of threes and now if you know well actually though when you hit threes you've already hit the shot, so that's six in a row, so that's fun and you celebrate. But yeah, like free throws and stuff like that, as a play-by-play guy, it's like, okay, how do you let the listener know he's got it going without
because
I'm radio. It's right. Not television. You can't throw a graphic up.
Yeah. Can I give you my thoughts on this real quick, and then we'll get to what's on tap?
Okay.
I think what you're getting to is right, and I'll tell you as a listener on radio
because
or TV.
It is. The conspiracy theory that I'm jinxing him is ridiculous when you think about it.
It is ridiculous, but people believe it.
Yes. But there's a power of belief there, right? I would say in those situations as a listener, I'm very interested to know if somebody is – hey, he's hit X amount in a row or something. You got to let me know after they're done.
Okay.
As soon as that individual's done hitting two free throws, so let's say it goes to 13 free throws in a row or whatever the hell the streak is, I think you wait, and as soon as the other team inbounds it, you let, he's on fire right now. He's 13 of his life. But he's at the line.
Yeah.
You cannot mention before the first, and you should not mention
so
after the first.
So usually it's more of a generic comment, like so-and-so gets to the line where he's been making hay all game long or something like that. A general comment.
That's okay.
Okay.
That's different than telling us exactly.
It takes a little while to find that nuance in there. It's like, okay, I need to let the listeners know he's been killing it at the line all night, but I don't want to give him the announcer jinx.
I realized with golf, I have superstitions. So
yeah, I did that a couple years ago at a Hawks game where they traded for a new goaltender and he had made a couple starts. He hadn't had a shutout all year, and there was like 45 seconds left in the game, and they were up 2-0, and Seattle had nothing going on offense. And it was kind of a dead play where the puck was getting dumped back and forth. And I made a comment like, hey, he's pacing for his first shutout of the year and in a Hawks uniform. They scored two goals in 30 seconds and sent it to overtime. Yeah, no, not gonna live that one down for a while.
Finesse just hammering.
Like, what are you doing?
Was that the night? Didn't a bunch of Hawks fans randomly tweet at you?
Yeah, like, are you doing, man? You can't say that. I was like, well, they didn't have nothing going on. What do you want from me here?
This is exactly superstition in sports. It's so stupid, and yet it makes so much sense. All right, let's find out what's on tap.
Nerd and Sprague know what's brewing.
I'm not paid to be bold. I'm paid to be right.
There's a lot of sporting events that you say, oh, I got to go do that.
This is What's on Tap, poured by Pelican Brewing Company, born at the beach on 1080. The Fan.
Well, What's on Tap is brought to you in The Fan by Pelican Brewing Company, born at the beach, online at pelicanbrewing.com. Happy August, everybody. I was taking care of my mentals yesterday, back to earn the chicken.
Mentals and chicken, highly important.
You see that Beirut explosion?
Yeah, that was wild, man. Looks like an atomic bomb.
It really did, and they're saying it was just a fireworks building?
I think that's what I've read, but
have we confirmed that, or is that still the thinking?
Sicanic had a really funny tweet.
I'm guessing there's probably a little bit of intelligence gathering going on.
Dude, fireworks explode like that? That's
conspiracy theory, let's go.
Well, no, I wouldn't have guessed that they explode like that.
If it's in the supply area where the actual explosive in bulk is being kept and hasn't been applied
to
fireworks, then yeah, you could see that going on.
You also have a combination maybe of like building gas of some sort.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
That thing was crazy. And I believe either yesterday or today was the 75th anniversary of us dropping the bomb.
Oh.
Hiroshima or Nagasaki?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They said that explosion, by the way, I saw a video 5.5 miles away. A guy recorded it. And it's amazing. You have to wait like 30 seconds. And then eventually it got to him, and
blows through the window.
Yeah.
Nuts.
All right, well, we'll talk. Did you get to the Larry Scott letter? Did that come out after the show?
That came out after the show.
Okay.
So we obviously talked about the Pac-12 player demands, but then their letter that they wrote to Larry Scott I saw later in the day, and then obviously his response, and then their follow-up
Their response to his response. Yes. We'll get to all of that coming up here. The Daily Ticker's been pushed to 1 o'clock. Chris Gordy works for 790 Sports Talk Radio in Houston. And big matchup tonight. Two hottest teams in the NBA.
Sure.
Blazers are 1-1. What are you talking about?
I mean, Houston is, yeah. They've probably been the story of the start so far.
Yeah, Houston should have lost their first game. I watched that one, yeah, and then should've. Last night was actually, what, 2 days ago?
Yeah, then when they beat Milwaukee that on
Sunday
night.
That was an impressive win.
Really impressive.
So we'll get to that. We got Blazer talk to get to. There's a rumor about a Blazer that potentially could be rejoining the team. Damian Lillard is on the mission to get to that.
Ooh.
So we'll talk college football. Why can't college coaches not be idiots? Serious question. Everything is under a microscope, and you're using N-bombs and weird voicemails or recorded conversations. I just don't get college coaches, man. So... we'll talk about that. We got NFL true or false to get to as well. Crunch time. We got some goof stories as well. But we'll start with college football. Larry Scott's response to the Pac-12 player demands and then the response from the players to Larry Scott. We'll start there as this whole thing is very interesting given we're only about a month and a half away from college football being here. So we'll start there. Dirt and Sprague with you on this Tuesday afternoon. Back with more on radio.com and 1080 The Fan. All right, welcome back in. 1218 on Portland Sports Leader, 1080 The Fan. Dirt and Sprague with you. Pac-12 Football Unity is the group of players who let it be known what their demands are to the Pac-12 and Larry Scott if they want to play this year.
Mm-hmm.
Quite a bit of support. I think every school except Colorado had a player representative involved in that group.
It was kind of funny that Colorado didn't have one.
Yeah, I wonder what that is. Players being lazy, the coach making it very clear, do not do this.
Did they just forget that Colorado was in the Pac-12?
I think Colorado has not yet.
Oh, that's right.
Remembered that they're consistently in the Pac-12.
I thought they still played Nebraska every year.
But Larry Scott had a list of demands and what the players were looking to get. Obviously, I think you drew that out probably pretty well yesterday during the show, so I won't really get into those details. You know what they are. Larry Scott responded just after you got off the air. I think it was in the middle of prime time. It didn't really say a whole lot in the letter. It was a 2-page letter, so I'll give him at least time for thinking about what he wanted to say. It was just more of, did you say anything? He says, we're eager to hear more about your concerns and very happy to discuss. I will come back to you in the coming days following discussion with our members and student athlete leaders to schedule a call for this week to discuss the matters that you have raised. He went on to basically just acknowledge the racial injustice stuff. They're already working on that. The health insurance should not be a big issue, and I think that's a point of leverage the players have. You're already getting it for 4, extend it to 6. 50% revenue does not seem likely in any scenario, so no. If they're just throwing these out there fully prepared to have to give up on some of these negotiations, I'm assuming they are. The group did respond to Larry Scott last night, just a few hours after the commissioner put out his letter. And they said, while we appreciate the response, we are looking to move on a faster timeline than you have proposed. We are 2 weeks from fall camp and would like to work to come to a resolution so that we can play this season. Every day that we don't have discussion put players at additional risk of COVID. So now we have a response from Larry Scott and a response to the response from the players. What are we making of this?
It should be noted, by the way, that Justin Fields did an interview today, and he said that there is a group that is now coalescing in the Big Ten. Now, they have not gotten to the point of where the Pac-12 is of making specific demands, but there is a dialogue going on between Big Ten players at different schools wondering, should this be something that they pursue. So I wanted to point that out. I think we could end up seeing this being a nationwide thing and not just a Pac-12 thing. And I mentioned on the show yesterday, even Trevor Lawrence saw what the Pac-12 did, and he tweeted his support to the group saying that he agrees with most of the things that they're demanding. The Larry Scott response I thought was pretty on par for Larry Scott. Like, he responds with trying to highlight all the things that the conference does. You know, the one of the bullet points they asked for is something that the Pac-12 has already given them, and that is the ability to opt out and not lose your scholarship. You can keep your spot on the roster, but you're not allowed to be a part of the team. So they already are getting one of their demands. But he highlights the health benefits and the ability to go back to school after your playing career is done, and tries to go down this long list of things that the conference does. And then he ends it by saying, we'll get back to you later this week about scheduling a time to talk. And you would wonder, and I would want to ask him, shouldn't there be a little more sense of urgency here? Now, maybe, and I've read, you know, Bruce Feldman had a good piece on this. There is some belief amongst football programs and athletic directors that when push comes to shove, like, are these guys really willing to sit out? I think that's the giant elephant question in the room of, are they willing to put their money where their mouth is and not play this upcoming season? Because if they are, then Larry Scott should be taking this more seriously. But by the sense of his response, I took that as he just thinks these guys are, they're trying to raise some issues, trying to, you know, shine a spotlight on the conference. But in 2 weeks when practice is supposed to start, most of these guys are going to be there.
Yeah, but like, what is the response if it's Penei Sewell and Javon Holland not playing?
Yeah.
Right? Like, if you're Mario Cristobal, and by all accounts, by the way, multiple schools have been given compliments by these player, this coalition of players of, hey, you know, it's not our school. Our school's doing good. Like, I heard Jonathan Smith remarks. I've heard positive stuff from Oregon. Mm-hmm. So I think there was a player that had positive stuff in Washington with Jimmy Lake. Obviously, Rolovich is not part of this conversation because, well, that whole leaked phone call. But I do wonder if Javon Hollins and Penei Sewells of the world decide to opt out because they don't get what they want. Does Mario Cristobal call Larry Scott directly? Does him and Rob Mullins team up and get on a big conference call with other athletic directors? I think it's also going to be a part of how important is the player? I hate to say that, but if you have a group of third string football players, I don't know how far you're getting in negotiations. I like it. I said, I think they have the leverage right now. It's on them to play. If they don't play, they're going to lose this money. But you do need, you need Penei Sewells of the conference to kind of come together on this coalition if you really want to be heard. I'm with you in the sense of, feels like he's just punting this and say, oh, yeah, in a week.
And we'll talk to you later in the week.
And then another week. And then another week. I've said it all along. It's always made me feel a little uneasy that we're just sending 18 to 22-year-olds out there at a virus where nobody can tell me what happens 2 years after contracting the virus.
Right, right.
There's an odd feeling of that, especially when they're not getting paid. And you can spare me with the whole education thing. They've done enough studies of this. College degrees are going down more and more and more in our current society. So the whole education thing's starting to go out the window a little bit. But I think you're going to need the big players of your conference and to stick behind what they're saying. If you're not willing to really sit this out, you're probably not going to accomplish very much.
Right. I think also, too, on that, you need headline players. There's no doubt about that. The toughest challenge for this group is going to be, can you get the players further down the roster, though? Because we've seen, you know, we talked about the Virginia Tech defensive back who's sitting out for the year.
Caleb Farley,
and he did an interview yesterday that I talked about on the show where he said the reason he did was because he showed up at a Virginia Tech workout and there was no mask and there's just packed
like
into a gym.
Of them, like, in a room.
He's like, dude, screw this, man. I'm going to the NFL next year. I'm not risking long-term health. I don't know what's happening here. I'm getting the hell out of Virginia Tech. These guys, like Penei Sewell, Javon Holland, players of that level, you know, similar to some players at Washington who are on the list, USC as well, they have the ability to sit out for the year and be perfectly fine. Like, it's not a huge deal for them. If Penei Sewell sits out this upcoming season, or Javon Holland, just to use Oregon as an example, sits out, they're still going to be highly drafted guys. Penei Sewell will be a top five pick. Javon Holland, I don't know where he's projected, but
he's a first round guy.
I think he's a lights out safety, and he's going to be a top 10 guy.
Right,
first or second round pick at the bare minimum. He's going to be fine, and he does not need to play this upcoming season of college football. Where it becomes a different conversation is the further you get down the line. There are some guys that this is their chance. This is the highest level they're ever going to play. This is their opportunity. Now, they have the ability to keep their scholarship if they opt out, but I think that's where the group needs to stick together in having a common goal and not have anybody splintering off if they want to accomplish what they want to accomplish. Because if it ends up just being headline players that at the, you know, August 17th comes around, they say, you know what, we're not going to practice, that's going to suck for the conference, and your point is valid. Like, that's going to be brutal to not have big-time guys playing college football this year, but they're still going to have enough on a roster to field a team, and the season's going to go on, and this movement will eventually fall apart. You need to have a widespread coalition.
Penei Sewell, Javon Holland, Thomas Graham, Jordan Scott, and Nick Pickett are among the top end names that you would know that are part of just the Oregon faction of this. Not to mention, did we find out what Oregon State's were? Like, what player representatives?
Well, Grant was the main player who was a spokesperson for it, and he's actually really eloquent, and he's done a great job.
I assume Jadon Grant was going to be a part of that group. He's been pretty active during the Black Lives Matter movement.
Right.
Obviously, he comes from a, you know, his household and being around in Oregon for his whole life and understanding what's really gone on around here, and then I think just being in the know and understanding what is kind of on the line for the future of the players, I'm not shocked at all to find out he was going to be a part of that group. I just didn't know if anybody else had released.
I haven't seen. I know they have the reporting is that they have 400 players or 400 plus players across the conference, but not every single one has been named yet.
All right. I kind of want to stick with this and ask this question. Coming up next, is this really going to impact anything? Like, when push comes to shove, do you think if the Pac-12 season can start in late September, we're really going to have 400 players that if they don't get what they're looking for, sit out of this, and the ramifications of the conference, if that is to happen. We'll talk about that next. You can share your thoughts and your feelings on this group and what they're aiming to do along with the Pac-12's response to it at 503-250-1080. That's the fan text line. We'll talk some more college football next. What if I told you I think I had an idea yesterday on a walk that would solve the Pac-12's problem? Okay. It's a little out here. All right. A little out there.
Fire it off.
So the Pac-12 is not alone in this. I mean, they kind of are because there hasn't been another player group to speak up and speak out and threaten to not play like the Pac-12. But as you mentioned, the Big Ten might have a group building. There might be a Big 12 one. The SEC seems like the only conference where these kids just shut up and play and do everything that the schools tell them to do.
Although there was one linebacker at LSU that just went viral because he was one of the guys that caught COVID at that party that they went to.
Oh.
And he lost 35 pounds, I believe.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Said he's not in football playing shape. He's not ready to go and take it seriously, please.
Well, maybe they'll build up more and more. But I was thinking yesterday, you know, there's a big problem. These conferences have to figure out what they want to be okay with. The financial details of their conferences, what kids can make or not make, health protocols, all of that. Also, how they're going to figure out to have a season, because it seems like we have these conferences kind of on two different playing fields. One conference is playing 10 conference games only. Another conference is playing 11 total games. There's a school that's an independent that's in a conference. The SEC, they're going to probably go by their own set of rules. We need to get on the same page here. And I saw a news blurb yesterday that really made me go, aha. And it was The Rock buying the XFL. Now, I know you might be going, oh, God, no, I'm not going to talk XFL. In fact, I actually don't care at all that he bought the XFL. It's still a crappy product. And The Rock owning it, it does nothing more than to say, hey, that guy taking the picture in front of the logo now has a better smile than Vince McMahon.
Yeah, that should be jaw-dropping that the entire league sold for $15 million.
Exactly. Tell me why, because Dennis Dodd alluded to this about 2 months ago. Tell me why the Power Five conference commissioners should not come together and schedule a meeting with Roger Goodell to just embrace that they are the definitive minor league of the NFL. Their seasons don't have to change. You can keep the same schedule. Your competing interests for like 2 or 3 weeks of the entire year. So largely you're unbothered. Why should they not? And then you get more financial assistance with a lower minor league system, which you already basically are, right? You're a feeder system into the NFL. You don't like the way the NCAA handles anything. Hell, nobody likes the NCAA. Dennis Dodd wrote about this. Are they going to think about breaking away as a Power Five from the NCAA and just doing their own thing? I kind of wondered, why not do that and then try to see what the NFL's gauge of interest would be of just saying, hey, we're your partner. We have our own revenue. You have your own revenue, but we are going to just get in together on this. We're officially the minor league affiliate.
It's funny you bring that up because there was a story that was under the radar for me this weekend that I didn't see until late Sunday night. And I talked about it briefly yesterday, but there is a Board of Regents vote today for the NCAA to vote on the fall championships. And there is a widespread belief that if they cancel those fall championships, now they don't have anything to do with football. That's a separate entity with ESPN and all that stuff. They can't cancel.
Yeah, ESPN basically owns the championships.
They can't cancel the college football playoff, but they can cancel men's soccer, women's soccer, volleyball, right? All the other fall Olympic sport models. If they do, there is a thought out there, and there was a great article on Sports Illustrated this weekend that I brought up on the show yesterday, that the Power Five for at least this year, and it might be the start of that riff, could say, you know what, screw you. We're going to fund our own championships. We're going to have our own seasons. We don't need the NCAA to put all of this stuff on. We'll play our conference schedules, and we'll come together as Power Five conferences. But, you know, throw some money into a pot and say, here's our championships. We're going to have them. The reason they need to do it is because if the fall sports championships all get canceled, they cannot have a football season. That's a terrible look, because then you're admitting everything that the Pac-12 players are arguing right now is you're just doing this for money. And if it's not safe for the other sports to be played, then why is it safe for football to be played? So that was the whole argument, is that the Power Five might need to come together and say, we need to keep these sports going, because if we're going to have a football season this year, we need the other Olympic sports to be played as well. And that could be the start of what you're talking about. If they do that this year, I mean, that's step one to the Power Five just separating themselves from the NCAA.
See, this is the ludicrous part of the NCAA and in general with conferences right now. you cannot tell me. There's no evidence otherwise to tell me that this season would be anything other than a money grab.
Right. It's all it
right?
is.
Right. So like that report, while very accurate and I think very concerning for the future of what's going to happen, I think it's crazy that we're still kicking around this idea from a media and national perspective that like there's another reason that they're going to play college football. There isn't. There's,
no, it's all financial.
It's strictly money. So you know that. I know that. Swag knows that. Every listener listening right now, as much as they may hate your opinion or my opinion, we all can agree on that. There's no other reason you play football other than to say we don't want to lose $60 million per school.
Sure.
Right? So that whole thing is not held water at all.
Like, well, and it becomes concrete. If all the other sports don't play and only football plays, then that solidifies it.
Yeah.
But at
right.
least if they find a way to group together and have the other championships, they can say, no, we just care about the student. Like, they have a deflecting argument that they can make, not the case if football is the only sport that's played.
Well, and the non-generating, you know, the non-revenue generating sports, those are always going to exist. I think football could actually be able to break away as a Power 5 group and say, strictly football, we are no longer tied to the NCAA. And you could instantly go, well, the NCAA, why would they want to do anything? Yeah, football is the biggest of money makers. They make a lot of money on the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, March Madness is the one thing that makes
March
money outside
Madness
of college football.
Is a huge beast. And so obviously there's a lot more that goes into this conversation. But seriously, at what point do the conference commissioners start kicking around this idea of breaking away? Because the NCAA has been inept. Mark Emmert sent out a statement 2 weeks ago and was like, well, we're evaluating everything right now. It's like, okay, thanks for waiting a month.
Yeah, they've done literally nothing.
And giving us that statement, they pick and choose who they discipline and how hard they did. North Carolina cheats for years in football and basketball. And guess what? There's a loophole in that system. No big deal. USC, Reggie Bush's parents get a house from an agent. Oh my God, you can't do anything good in football for 4 years. It's utter madness, chaos, ridiculousness. Anything else you want to describe with it, you can. I just was thinking they are already the feeder system. And I don't know what the NFL probably wouldn't even be kicking this idea around. But if you're a commissioner, right, you're dealing with player blowback now on health and safety and finances. I don't know if you're having players complain if you're the direct and outward feeder system into the NFL. If they're like, hey, the NFL logo is tied in with these college programs and there's scout access and you get evaluations throughout the year. I don't know if you're getting big player coalitions to come together and say, well, we're not going to play this year.
Yeah, at least separating two, even if you don't become the feeder system directly as a minor league for the NFL, which everybody knows that you are. It just allows you to separate from the NCAA and have a free ability to kind of handle things the way that you want to handle things.
Because you can afford to do this on your own.
You can. They all can. They make enough money in TV contracts. March Madness would be the only thing that would be largely affected. How would it play out? Could you still tie into that? Because the smaller conferences are not going to leave the NCAA, and the NCAA controls that. And that's a huge money grab and a big deal in college sports. So that would be the only bugaboo that they would have to figure out. I we had some listeners texting in their thoughts on the Pac-12 players. And maybe I'm putting too much stock into it because we've seen these kind of things start up and fall by the wayside over the last handful of years. Northwestern was the most recent one. The reason why I think this one's different is for a point that we're making, and that is how much money that they desperately need. The football players understand that. The only reason we're having college athletics this year is because we want to prop up the football season so we can make money. That's it. They understand how important this year is. Any other year, the universities mostly control the leverage at this bargaining table. Right now, I think that power has shifted. The other reason why I think they need to be taking this seriously is because of the policy that they have already implemented, and it's one of the things that the players demanded. Players can opt out, keep their scholarship, sit out for the year, and come back and play another year. So it's risky for guys. You know, you never know how the eligibility stuff and will somebody younger come in and take your spot. There's always risk involved there. But these guys have an opt-out this year. They can all choose to say, you know what? Nope, we're not going to play. We're going to hold on to our scholarship. We can't be a part of the team until next year or whenever that next calendar season kicks up. But there's not a lot of risk there for these guys. And we've seen a handful of college players that have already come out and say that. So if I'm the Pac-12, man, I'm taking this as seriously as possible because even if you don't meet all their demands – And even if you guys, that's not even boycotting the season. That's just following through on health and safety protocols that the conference put in place, that you could have widespread guys just opting out and saying, you know what, we're going to play next year. And then the conference is totally screwed.
But do you think, because they're not going to meet the 50% revenue and they're not going to get conference commissioners and athletic directors or coaches or whoever else they named in that to take pay cuts. That's just, is it right? I mean, yeah, if you ask me, Larry Scott shouldn't be making more than $1 million based right. on the job he's done as a commissioner. Right. Is that going to happen, though? He's going to cut his salary by a few million? No chance.
No, that's where you got to meet at the bargaining table. And some of those things I think were smart for them to put in because it allows them the leverage needed to get the health and safety stuff they want. They want the financials to keep the Olympic sport. Stanford already cut some. They want to keep those around.
You know, and some people said that they did that mainly just for PR standpoint. I don't think players are thinking in that regard.
No, I thought that was
kind of the cool part of it, right? Aside from them speaking up and having a voice for themselves in the middle of a global pandemic, I thought it was really cool that they had taken notice of the Stanford situation and other programs at their own schools who might
it's
be on
going
the,
to happen,
you know,
yeah.
the borderline cut and saying, no, let's take care of everybody. We can afford to do this. Yeah. You know, it's not just Larry Scott either. And that's what I think a lot of people were losing sight of. All these articles come out about Larry Scott, and everybody gets on Twitter. Why is Larry Scott our commissioner? Well, it's because the president's okay it. So you're yelling at Larry Scott, which is cool. How about we yell at the old ass dudes who are making a ton of money and just don't care? Those are the people that matter the most on the impact. So it should be Larry Scott and the university presence, I think, on those phone calls. If you want to talk financial stuff, they need to be involved in those conversations. Hey, for all the revenue we generate, we're going to donate blank money into an account and we'll fund other non-generating programs and assure in the Pac-12 that we keep them. Or, hey, we'll create a fund and we'll give back to social justice causes or community causes or whatever
right.
it is.
Right. Fund your health insurance for 6 years after college is one of the demands.
And that's a very easy thing to meet, given that they already get health insurance for 4. You extend it to 2, let them go get their master's degrees. There's a lot of options they can do. So, you know, I don't know how much they're going to stick to their guns financially as a group. There is a lot of things that they could achieve within the conference of their demands that shouldn't be a big deal. But I still think about that and I go, the NCAA is a useless entity to you.
Yep.
You can afford to run your own bowl system. You can afford, you're already doing this anyway, right? Mm-hmm. Your budgets are stipulated on your travel and your lodging and all that. You can do this. What's the NCAA give you? ESPN owns most of those bowl games.
Right.
They already love the NFL.
Yeah, the Supreme Court decision, what was it, like 1984, that allowed conferences to go ink their own TV contracts, changed everything and got us to where we are now.
Absolutely. I look at this and I go, I don't know if the NCAA is going to help at all. I don't know where conference commissioners are going to play a big factor in terms of really listening and giving in on anything. If you're Power 5... hey, deal with the NFL, maybe make things a little easier. All right, I got a wild story of 3 random dudes, and then Chris Gordy covers the Houston Rockets for Sports Talk 790 in Houston. Big matchup tonight with the Blazers and Rockets. He'll join us at 1 o'clock. We'll get to those things next on The Fan. All right, welcome back in. 1250 here on The Fan. We've got Chris Gordy of Sports Talk 790 in Houston. The Rockets Blazers take on each other tonight. 6 o'clock ESPN.
A big game
no,
tonight,
TNT.
Man.
TNT.
TNT. Hopefully it's not a players-only broadcast. I'm not doing that, are they? That's all gone? Good. Okay.
No, we're mainly getting the same voices for all the games.
And so far it's been good.
And let me say, I don't know how many games have been played exactly, but I'll say of all the games I've seen, 85, 90% of them have actually been pretty close and decent.
Yeah, it's been good basketball, man. It really has been. The only person I don't like is Reggie Miller, so I hope he's not on the call. Mm. Although, did you hear Doris Burke last night?
The ex-husband line.
That was pretty funny.
Yeah, you think the ex-husband comes out and talks about Doris Burke as a wife? It's like the one thing that could maybe hurt her image. Everybody, like, if you don't say Doris Burke is the best color analyst, you almost shouldn't say anything because social media will eat you alive. For such a likable individual, the ex-husband was like, let me tell you about a night Doris had in Detroit.
She's not that lovable, man.
She wasn't loyal.
Try living with her.
No, but I've enjoyed it thus far. So it's a big matchup, and we'll talk about it with Chris Gordy. Did you happen to catch this AP story? 3 men rescued from a Pacific island after writing SOS in the sand.
Dude, I saw this headline and my immediate thought was, that actually works?
It really works. So Three men have been rescued from a tiny Pacific island after writing a giant SOS sign in the sand that was spotted from above. The three men had been missing in the Micronesia, word I can't say, for nearly 3 days when their distress signal was spotted Sunday on an island just outside of Australia. U.S. aircraft, the Australian Defense Department, said on Monday the men had apparently set out for on a boat that was about 23 foot long. And on July 30th, and had intended to travel about 27 miles to another stop when they sailed off course and ran out of fuel. The department said that they had long been searching, could not find them.
That is terrifying.
Searchers in Guam asked for Australian help. The military ship, which was returning to Australia from exercises in Hawaii, diverted to the area and joined forces with U.S. searchers from Guam. Three men were found about 118 miles from where they had set out.
That is wild.
And an SOS Morse code signal from the beach was seen. They landed a helicopter that gave the men food and water supplies, waiting for the boats to eventually get close to the island and then send somebody up there to grab them.
Isn't that crazy? Like, you see this kind of stuff in movies all the time. You think of...
Castaway,
you think of Castaway. That's probably the first one.
The flashlight, the logs. S-O-S!
Right, trying to get rescued from a deserted island out where, you know, somewhere in the middle of the ocean. It's wild that it actually worked. It's crazy. Can you imagine how terrifying that would be to go that far off track? To not realize, I'm sure they did as they were, you know, going, but all of a sudden you're like running out of gas. You got to find your way onto an island. Thank God there was an island there that at least they could hang out on. I want more answers on what was on this island. Like, yeah. Were there cool animals? What was going on? Was it anything there to eat or drink? Well, you know, I got a lot of questions out of this story, but it's wild that it actually worked.
Yeah, your gut says that if they don't know how to fish without proper fishing equipment, they're just sticking to what's on the island, and that's what, presumably a coconut?
Maybe got a couple of things.
I highly doubt you have. You might have some birds, but you don't get land animals on these tiny islands,
well,
do you?
How are you going to kill a bird? How are you going to start a fire? Yeah. They don't have any of that equipment with them, I'm assuming.
Well, they might not be good birds to eat. Like, you kill a bird, you cook it, and you're like, yeah, there's barely any meat on the ribs.
That was all a waste of time.
How long before you quit? Like, when do you lose hope? Is it just a couple days for you? Like, I think if I'm there a week...
Yeah,
an SOS on the beach and I got no response, I'm just like, well,
here it is.
This is probably how you're dying. You're going to be the random skeleton that somebody finds on an island 100 years from now.
I'd give it 3 days before giving up hope. It wouldn't take me very long, man. You're out in the middle of the ocean. You can't see anything. This island, I'm assuming, from what I read, it was like tiny. Like, you can't.
It's not big.
All you see on the horizon is the ocean. It's not like ships are just sailing by all the time. You're 127 miles off course.
It looks like the circumference of the island might be like a quarter of a mile.
Right.
It's not a big island.
Yeah, we're not stuck on Zombies Island here, okay? You're on the middle of the ocean.
My,
I would have no hope.
I had a friend in a group chat text this story. I saw this on Twitter, and then I had a friend in a group chat that I have. He texted me, and he said, what would you do first, eat one of your friends or become the boyfriend of one of your friends? What are you giving into first? The stomach or the sexual needs?
Stomach.
Everybody said stomach.
Yeah.
And then somebody was like, why did you ask that? I was just curious.
Yeah, no, that's no. You got to eat, buddy.
There's a deeper question there. Are you looking to hook up with one of us?
What's going on here, man? I got some issues with that.
So, hey, a positive story in 2020.
They were saved on a deserted island. Now you know if you ever get stuck somewhere, SOS actually works.
I don't know, man. I think this is more luck than anything.
Oh, it's 100% luck.
Because how many of these islands...
somebody flying around to find... I mean, they were looking for them. They knew they were lost, so that helped a little bit.
But how many of these islands exist that people just don't find? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, they have an idea that there's islands in an area, but are you really searching them that deeply? I don't know.
Yeah, you also had the island with the population of people that never leave. Like, they don't know anything about technology, and they kill you if you come close.
Yeah, they'll let you know, too. They'll throw spears at you when you get close to the beach.
I think there was a guy from, like, Vancouver, wasn't there, that tried to go, like, spread Christianity to him?
He tried to save their souls, yeah.
Yeah, that didn't work out too well.
They freed his. Yeah. Did they ever get the body of that guy back?
I don't know.
Not good.
Not good.
Hey, Chris Gordy works for Sports Talk 790 in Houston. The Blazers have a big matchup tonight against the Houston Rockets as they keep looking to get closer and closer to the 8 seed, the 8-9 matchup. So we'll talk with him to kick off hour number two. That will also be our daily ticker. Loaded second hour, Dirt and Sprague. We're back with more on radio.com and 1080 The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.